across the besieged territory. More than 60 people were killed in the latest attacks across the Gaza Strip, with nearly 40 of them in Gaza City. Also, renewed Israeli strikes on displaced tents in Khan Yunis killed 3 more Palestinians. The Israeli occupation forces resumed the offensive against Gaza on March 18, breaking a 2-month ceasefire. More than 1,160 civilians have been killed since then. The death toll from the regime's genocide since October 2023 now tops 50,500, with nearly 115,000 others injured. And displaced Palestinians mourn the loss of their loved ones after an Israeli airstrike on a UN building in Jabalia left 22 people dead, including women and children. They say the attack came without any warning and there is no place safe from Israeli airstrikes.
There is absolutely no security here. They dropped a missile from the right side and another from the left side. Without warning, they dropped the 2 missiles without any prior warning. My mom was cooking on fire over there, a child was playing with a scooter in the alleyway, some people were exiting the toilet, others were cooking people who are totally uninvolved, who have done absolutely nothing against the Israelis. They ended up being bombarded, massacred, left without heads or legs.
This is a clinic, housing young children. It's affiliated with the UN, not Hamas or Fatah. As you can see, the martyrs are young children. They're all young boys and girls. In what way do they have the right to kill them? Targeting the clinic itself, not even outside, hitting the classroom over their heads. Where is the United Nations and where is the world?
What are these crimes of the occupation? What are these crimes? Show it to the entire world. Show it to all of humanity in the world, in the east and west of the earth.
And to get more updates on the current situation in Gaza, we're now joined by our correspondent, Abubakar Abed, who is joining us from Nairobi, Bala. Abubakar, welcome to the program. Give us an update, if you can, on the current situation where you are.
Yeah, there are just more massacres coming out from Gaza, more horrifying scenes emanating out from Gaza City, where Israeli warplanes have targeted a school that has been turned into shelter since the start of Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Now, the initial stat that we have from there is that 16 people have been killed, mostly children and women, and the number is expected to rise in the coming few minutes because of the ferocity of the strikes, the airstrikes that have been carried out on this school. So it's just another massacre coming out from there, and not only this, because Israeli tanks are still shelling the eastern parts of Al-Shija'iyah and Al-Zaytun neighborhoods, and in one of these separate attacks, Israeli drones strikes targeted a vehicle, killing 3 people in a Sabra neighborhood. So the killings are non-stop in those parts of the Strip, and this comes after the recent evacuation orders to the northern parts of the Strip. Now, moving to the southern parts of the Strip, where also Israeli jets, fighter jets, have targeted a tent, killing at least 6 people and wounded several others. All of them have been taken to the medical complex of Nasser to receive a treatment. Gaza's hospitals are working with the bare minimum in their hands. They don't have the supplies and aid. I've just been talking to doctors from here and there, and they've talked about a very, very severe scarcity of medical supplies. Things like IV fluids, things like gauze and monitors that are not found inside the ICU and the other wards of the hospital. This is apart from the fact that the number of operating rooms is also not enough, because there is a fuel crisis ongoing. There is also another crisis of the lack of supplies in every aspect of life. And here in central Gaza, also Israeli warplanes have targeted a residential building inside Al Baraj refugee camp, and Israeli artillery shelling hasn't stopped in the northern and the northwestern parts of Al Nusayrat camp. And particularly when we mention the Netzarim corridor, we talk about intense artillery shelling and obliteration processes that are taking place from a time to another. They're taking place very sporadically. So overall, the strikes remain unabated, and Israel continues pounding the besieged territory in every aspect. And of course, if we talk about the very recent evacuation orders, particularly in Rafah, Israel has been pounding and relentlessly pounding Rafah since probably for three days right now, and obliterating four residential blocks. And just may like give me the time to talk about the humanitarian situation, because the WFP has announced that the 25 WFP backed bakeries, all of them have shut down due to the lack of fuel and flour. And also they have said that in the next two days all the food parcels will end, and at the same time the all supplies that WFP has at the moment will also be they will also run out from the supplies in the next 2 weeks. So it's a very dire situation in every aspect as Israel intensifies its attacks all across the strip.
Very grim picture painted there, Abubakar. Thank you so much for that update. That is our correspondent, Abubakar Abed, giving us an update on the situation in the Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime presses on with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip as the regime forces displace more Palestinians from Rafah and southern Khan Yunis. Our Gaza correspondent Ahmed El Najab visited Khan Yunis, where Israeli forces carried out an airstrike last night on an area the regime itself had designated as a safe zone, killing more civilians.
Here in Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping, and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house, father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
Until this morning, the families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here, who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on a four-day trip to Hungary to find an international criminal court arrest warrant over his war crimes in Gaza. Netanyahu was welcomed by his Hungarian counterpart, Viktor Orban, in Budapest in an official ceremony. Netanyahu's visit comes at the official invitation of the Hungarian Prime Minister. After Netanyahu's arrival, the Hungarian government announced that it will withdraw in the coming days from the International Criminal Court. The ICC arrest warrant against the Israeli Prime Minister was issued last year. It argues that Netanyahu and his former Minister for Military Affairs are guilty of crimes against humanity for depriving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip of food, aid, and deliberately targeting them. And for more updates, we are now joined by our correspondent who is joining us from Hungary, Dieter Renick. Dieter, give us an update on the situation. The last time we spoke, you were in front of the hotel where Netanyahu was at, and you gave us an update that protests have been banned. Give us any update that you might have apart from that.
Yes, hello. Since we spoke the last time, Viktor Orban has actually announced that he had already signed the papers to initiate the protest of Hungary leaving the ICC this morning. So it is a formal process now that Hungary leaves the ICC. And I met, I'm just coming out of a meeting with the Palestinian ambassador to Hungary, Fadil Husseini, and he told me that he had a meeting with the foreign ministry yesterday. And in this meeting, they told him that they don't take any international organizations and they don't take the ICC serious. They think it is a political theater. They are anti-Israeli biased. So Orban this morning, he announced in a press conference at noon that he had already signed the papers to withdraw Hungary from the ICC. So Netanyahu will be here for the next 4 days. There is still no official schedule, but in the press conference earlier today, Orban made it clear the purpose of this trip. And he had 3 points of the focus of this visit of Netanyahu. He said that the first point is that he considers his government as the inheriting a so-called Judeo-Christian tradition, he called, and he said that Hungary, together with Israel, is a bulwark again, is a bulwark to defend Judeo-Christian tradition. What does it mean? It clearly means racist anti-Muslim motives. He said he will stop all migration from Muslim countries and he will put forward more Islamophobic agenda at the EU level. The second point that Orban made is that he will announce military cooperation with Israel. He said Hungary has, the Hungarian army has already implemented Israeli technologies and they will continue to cooperate on military and intelligence level.
Thank you so much for that comprehensive update. That is our correspondent Dieter Renick joining us from the Hungarian capital. German armed forces have shot down another advanced U.S. drone as it was violating the country's airspace.
The Yemeni armed forces' air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second our air defenses have shot down in 72 hours and the 17th during the Battle of the Promised Victory and the Holy Jihad in support of Gaza.
Yahya Seri said the Yemeni military has also targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and other warships in the Red Sea with cruise missiles and drones. He said the operation achieved its objectives. Sari said the Yemeni army's operation will continue until the regime's genocide against the oppressed Palestinian people in Gaza stops and the siege of the territory is lifted. He added the U.S. warplanes launched 36 overnight airstrikes on different parts of Yemen, including Sana'a, Sa'ada, and Hudaydah, leaving a number of people dead and injured. President Donald Trump has imposed sweeping new tariffs on U.S. trading partners, a move that the European Union has labeled as a major blow to the world economy.
President Trump's announcement of universal tariffs on the whole world, including the European Union, is a major blow to the world economy. I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism. The consequences will be dire for millions of people around the globe. also for the most vulnerable countries, which are now subject to some of the highest U.S. tariffs. The opposite of what we wanted to achieve.
The EU chief also said the bloc was prepared for further countermeasures to protect its interests and businesses if negotiations failed. Ursula von der Leyen emphasized that there is still an opportunity to address concerns through dialogue. China has also expressed firm opposition to tariffs on its export, pledging to take countermeasures. Beijing also criticized the measures as non-compliant with international trade rules that harm the legitimate rights and interests of the affected parties. Colombia and Australia criticized the U.S. for imposing new tariffs as well as vowing to take measures to protect their industries. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
These children are victims of a war that ended over a half a century ago. Landmines and explosive remnants of war are the cursed inheritance left to them by war. Up until the 20th century, the number of killed and injured caused by munitions left from wars was quite inconsequential. But the weaponry bill during the First World War mandated a new definition of unexploded munitions, left over from wars. Access to more powerful weapons led to a greater number of deaths, and thus more victories in battle. But no one was thinking of the other consequences of using such weapons. The predicament of the munitions left over from that war hadn't made itself fully evident yet when the Second World War broke out with even more powerful and destructive weapons than those used in the first. We witnessed destructive weaponry reach its peak near the end of the Second World War. The atomic bombs the United States dropped on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The Second World War not only saw the use of deadly weaponry, but also millions of anti-tank and anti-personnel mines being buried into the ground by all the warring parties. The destructive effects of this kind of weapon only became clear after the war was over. The world was no longer safe for civilians. Landmines and explosive remnants of war started causing casualties, cities, villages, the countryside. Any place where a bullet was once fired was potentially contaminated. The U.S. Army opened a new chapter in its fanatical use of deadly weapons during the Vietnam War. They dropped millions of bombs from the skies and desecrated the land by burying millions of mines. Unexploded submunitions from cluster bombs used in this war were too many to count and are still found today in the countries dragged into the Vietnam War, some even in the proximity of schools where children are studying. The International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, estimates that up to 11,000 people have been killed or maimed by unexploded ordnances, 30% of whom have unfortunately been children. An exact assessment of the amount of munitions left over by different wars is impossible. Large numbers of these unexploded munitions are still discovered in places which used to be battlefields many decades ago. It's hard to believe that a century after the end of the First World War, munitions containing mustard gas from that period have just recently been unearthed. This chart depicting the amount of unexploded ordnance discovered in Berlin between 1947 and 2011, makes it clear that we should always expect to find leftover munitions in historical war zones. It appears the end of these unexploded munitions is nowhere in sight, even though the war they were used in ended 70 years ago. Landmines and explosive remnants of war are the terrifying legacy. Mines are cheap to produce and thus widely used in battles. They are indefinite activity, and the unknown nature of their numbers and locations have made the world unsafe for civilians decades after the end of the war. Landmines don't distinguish between soldiers and civilians. Each year, approximately 7,500 people are killed or injured by landmines and explosive remnants of war. Nearly one-third of those who survive such explosions suffer loss of limbs. An official UNICEF report on children killed by landmines states, "Children are the most vulnerable group at risk from landmines and unexploded ordnance. Their curiosity compels them to pick up strange, unknown items in the hope of finding a new toy. Children in 60 countries are currently in danger of being killed by landmines. The risk from unexploded munitions is not just limited to accidents either. The people in some poorer regions collect these munitions in order to sell them or use the explosive materials inside. Unfortunately, such endeavors usually have deadly outcomes." Mines and explosive remnants of war have been widely used in Iran, Afghanistan, Angola, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Cambodia, Ethiopia, Iraq, Mozambique, Nicaragua, Somalia, Sudan, and many other war-stricken countries. All these countries are now grappling with the scourge of contaminated areas. Iran had no contaminated areas until 1980. However, the massive war which was about to start turned Iran into the second most contaminated country of the time. Iraq's Ba'ath regime invaded Iran in 1980 on orders of Saddam. Five of Iran's border provinces were under constant and heavy fire from Saddam's army for 8 years. After the Iraqi Ba'ath forces suffered multiple defeats in the first years of the war, Saddam resorted to defensive measures to stop the advance of Iranian forces. The Ba'ath army turned to attritional warfare by creating dense and layered minefields, building obstacles, wide trenches, and bombarding Iran's border provinces. The war ended after 8 years. In addition to all the destruction, Iran now had to start a new, quiet but longer war. Even though Iraqi forces had withdrawn from Iranian territory, Iran's fight against the leftover landmines and unexploded munitions had only just begun. Saddam had claimed that his soldiers would remain on Iranian soil even 50 years after the war ended. Khuzestan province, 1,500,000 hectares. Elam province, 1,700,000 hectares. Kermanshah province, 700,000 hectares. Kurdistan province, 150,000 hectares. And West Azerbaijan province, also 150,000 hectares.
Between them, these contaminated lands cover an area larger than the whole of the Netherlands, Switzerland, and other 121 countries, around 4,200,000 hectares. The density of the Iraqi minefields left in Iran don't match conventional military standards. Some of these contaminated lands contain over 130 landmines per hectare, which is 2 to 3 times the amount commonly used in minefields around the world. Ilam Province, Mehran City. This region of Iran near the Iraqi border covers 300 hectares, 100 of which was turned into minefields by Iraq. Each of these red dots represents 4 landmines, meaning the Iraqi army planted 60,000 mines in this area. The demining operation in this region is still ongoing even after 30 years. Saddam's government used over 20 million landmines and several millions of explosive ordnance on Iranian soil. This made Iran the second most contaminated country at the time, after Egypt. Iranian armed forces would start the clearance of contaminated lands as they were liberating those occupied regions. The demining process continued for more than a decade after the end of the war, and a large part of the contaminated areas were eventually cleared. However, that method could not achieve complete clearance due to the problems caused by the passage of time and the return of civilians to the region. After the initial clearance, a group of experts named the Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center was assembled to organize, implement, and oversee the necessary requirements for humanitarian demining activities. This group was tasked not only with systematic demining, but with educating civilians who were at risk in order to reduce the potential number of deaths. The group also needed to have the ability to communicate with other foreign and domestic institutions in order to expand international relations and convey the experience they had gained while clearing the minefields of Iran to the entire world. The geography and climate of each of the contaminated regions in Iran are quite different and diverse. Hot and arid plains, areas covered in sand, vast wetlands, deserts, high-altitude mountainous regions, forests, and pastures. These can all be found in Iran's 5 border provinces. Landmines and unexploded munitions are spread out throughout these regions, both close to the surface and buried deep underground. No one is willing to build their house, start a farm, take their herds grazing, invest money or establish a factory anywhere near a contaminated area. Life can't continue in a place where you can't trust the ground you stand on, even if that place is otherwise a paradise. The Islamic Republic of Iran Mine Action Center had a long path to complete demining ahead of it. No one knows exactly how many landmines and unexploded ordnance are buried in the ground, and we therefore cannot know when the last one is removed and complete clearance is achieved. Both the surface and the depths of the ground need to be searched centimeter by centimeter. You would be hard-pressed to find anyone who believed that landmines and ordnance can move. But in fact, seasonal floods can carry these mines and munitions and dump them near a farm or on the banks of rivers or near a school. This means that previously cleared areas can become recontaminated. The river is impossible to completely demine because of the flooding and the trees around it. So the local residents must constantly be ready for the river to send them a deadly gift, even if they live kilometers away. The shifting sands create a new landscape every day here. These same shifting sands have made life tremendously difficult for the Iraqi forces during the war because their very dense minefields were quickly buried under the dunes. They therefore had to build multiple minefields in the same place to stop the advance of Iranian forces. In some regions, up to 6 layers of mines were planted into the sand. The area of Chazabeh is several square kilometers, and clearing it is extraordinarily difficult since every centimeter of the sands needs to be sifted through up to a depth of 6 meters. In addition, the sands shift and the height of the sand dunes changes almost every day. One thing the demining squads need to keep in mind is that the mines stay active for years under the sand, and sometimes become even more sensitive than before. The smallest mishandling can lead to an explosion. There is some probability of finding landmines in any area where military forces were once present, even if no conflict took place there. This is because minefields are designed to be obstacles for enemy forces, and any area considered to be a possible point of attack will be rigged with mines. Iraqi forces created minefields even in places that weren't a potential source of threat, and with high density, no less. A while ago, a man lost his leg after stepping on a mine, which the rain had moved down from this minefield. Every rainy season increases the chance of other areas being contaminated. If any of the clearance squad members is injured here, it'll take at least over an hour to get him to the nearest hospital, even in good weather.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Slander, dangerous weapon of cowards, one of the greatest and most dangerous, and in the meantime, most popular corruptions of tongue is the slander. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to all of you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of For a Better Life, where today, this is Nahid having the honor of hosting you on another episode. As we started today's episode by remembering the most dangerous weapon of tongue, we are going to talk about slander, the harmful, at the same time, the most important thing that we need to be considered of regarding our tongues and the words we choose to use. Slander indicates mentioning hidden weak points and faults of others so that if they hear, they will be disturbed. These points are either concerned with religion, with the moral beliefs, spiritual and social aspects. It's okay to see people, but let's review that it's not okay and acceptable to start judging people, and more importantly, start to use our tongue in the favor of a slander. So there are several motives for a slander, of course. The first one can be revenge. Like, let's see the roots first, the reasons for which we might fall in the trap of slander, and then we're going to go deeper into the ways to solve this issue. So the first one can be revenge, like, as there is no easier and simpler way than slander for damaging a person's reputation and character, for extinguishing flames of spite and revenge blazing in the hearts of some people. The second thing can be envy, as the envious person always wishes for end of blessings of the envied one when he cannot achieve his purpose or her purpose. For compensating it, they try to damage the other person's reputation and credit through slander or revealing their weak points and relieving the fire of their own envy in this way. The other trap, which can be there always for us, is acquitting ourselves from a committed sin. In other words, we try to simplify or justify our actions through mentioning the faults of others. The other thing can be mockery or deride. Of course, mockery and laughing at others has several motives. And after rooting of its factors in man's entity, one of the ways of realization of this goal is slander. The other thing can be amusement. There are a lot of people who engage in mentioning weak points and faults of the others only for amusement or warming circles or even being in the meeting and being called the fun person around. Because sometimes regarding other people, no other sin is sweeter than slander. So it should also be said that people, not only people enjoy amusement, but also enjoy causing others to laugh. The other motive can be the excitation of curiosity instinct. This instinct, which is one of the most powerful man's instinct, invites us to urge others for slander and revealing weak points of different individuals. And perhaps the sweetness of slander for some people originates from the false understanding of our instinct. Such people enjoy knowing mysteries and faults of others and are curious about them, and therefore make the others to slander more eagerly and enthusiastically. Of course, taking into account these factors can be effective to help us all to treat slander as well.
ارتباطتون رو با خدا قوی کنید. در مسائل دینی به نقاط عقلانی و ظریف.
Improve your connection with God. Pay attention to logical and detailed points in religious issues and learn them from great masters. There are sentiments in religion, but they rely on deep ideality and deep thought. This thought must be learned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
asks you for a better life, where today we first started talking about the different perspectives and aspects toward slander. The motives that are always around, they are always there, and we are at the risk of falling into the traps of them. Now, regarding the dangers of slander, let's just mention the importance of this sin in the view of Quran and the tradition of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. And then we will see how we can solve it in a better way. Although most people do not respect this issue, the original Islamic resources have put an extra emphasis on it. The most vigorous interpretations are seen in the Holy Book of Quran and traditions concerning slander. And now we are going to mention some of them in order to get a view of the way Islam is showing and is explaining this issue to us. The Holy Book of Quran has considered the slander as an inhuman action and has introduced it as eating flesh of a dead brother, because in Islam's view, a Muslim's brother's reputation and prestige is respectable as his blood. It is noteworthy that in the Holy Book of Quran, suspicion, spying, and slander are respectively forbidden, where Quran says, "All you who believe, shun much suspicion. For you, some suspicion is a crime. And spy not, neither backbite one another. Would one of you love to eat the flesh of his dead brother? Yeah, abhor that. So abhor the other and keep your duty to Allah. Allah is relenting, the merciful." And this interpretation may indicate that first a man is involved in suspicion, and suspicion leads him to spying, and spying too leads them in revealing the hidden faults of individuals, and this is the Islamic recommended source of slander. Once Prophet was talking to his friends, and then he was speaking so loudly that even the girls in the house too heard. Our Prophet was saying, "Oh, the group who has believed by tongue, but not by hearts, do not slander about a Muslim, and do not spy their secret affairs. The one who is curious for the secret affairs of his religious brothers, God shall reveal his own secret affairs and scandalize him inside his own house." So the point of non-compatibility of slander with the spirit of belief may indicate that the first sign of belief is observing the rights of a believer, and this is in contradiction with slander. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is also reported to have said, "One who says that he has seen and heard about a believer is among those that God has told about them. Those who like the vices to spread among believers, there shall be a painful chastisement for them." So the point of the issue is clear, because considering that in most cases, faults are included among religious, faults revealing hidden faults of people, and these may cause the others to take other views for performing sins and disobedience, and consequently spreading the vibe of making the sins and spread the bad negative vibe within the communities. So that is why in Islam also, again, it is highlighted that the value and the effect, the value of controlling ourselves in front of the slander, and even the value of knowing that we are at the danger and at the risk of slander are really important. Now, let's end today's episode with one very short part of Sahli Shirazi's Bosan, the Iranian prose writer and poet, and see the way he, as the artist, is wearing the glasses of the beauty of literature and at the same time keeping the beauty of Islamic beliefs in mind, and how he is going to put these beliefs into the form of a prose. "Speak no evil concerning the good or the wicked, for thus thou wrongs the former and makes an enemy of the latter. Know that he who defames another reveals his own faults. If thou speak evil of anyone, thou art sinful, even though what thou sayest be true." Let's wish you a better life and great moments. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens of Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip as the regime continues its aggression on the besieged territory. Germany Army forces say they have shot down another US MQ-9 drone over Hodeidah and targeted US warships in the Red Sea with drones and cruise missiles. And the EU chief says the bloc is ready to respond to the latest US tariffs as Washington trading partners slam Trump for imposing new levies. Thank you so much for joining us. Our fourth story takes us to Palestine, where more Palestinians are falling victim to Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes on Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages unabated across the besieged territory. More than 60 people were killed in the latest attacks across the Gaza Strip, with nearly 40